Welcome to A Brighter Day in the Neighborhood with your host, Angela Jones. Presented by Brighter Day Law, listen to the stories of the people who make Colorado Springs a great place to live and make our world better every day. We want to give back to those who give so much to us.
So good morning, Colorado Springs. It's another brighter day in the neighborhood, and I'm your host, Angela Jones of Brighter Day Law. We're here this morning with Todd Baldwin, the founder of Red Leg Brewing Company.
Good morning.
Good morning, Todd. So we were just chatting before we came on the air about the mornings you've spent being interviewed.
Yeah, super fun, right? Like nothing like beers in the morning.
Right. That's right? What we were talking about. So you came off a taste test into a morning show.
Well, it seems like everyone who wants to interview me, they're always like, hey man, what beer did you bring? And I'm like, it's like 6 a.m. And then I learned really quickly, in interviews, always bring beer. And of course, this morning, I forgot beer.
Darn it.
I'm sorry.
I'm a teetotaler, so it's okay. we'll let you slide past on that. But yeah, no, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it. I was reading over your bio, and I'm a military spouse. My husband's a military veteran. He worked a lot with special forces, and we came here to retire out in Colorado Springs, and I visited your brewery when I wasn't teetotaling, and it's, you know, everything there is fantastic. I really would love to hear more about like what you're doing in the community and to expand that footprint.
Sure. Well, first off, it's been a whirlwind the last year and a half, just getting our new facility up and running. I think without the support of the veteran community, military community, spouses like yourself, we wouldn't have been able to do the really cool expansion that we have been doing. And I think community cultures are defined and maintained by small businesses. So to be able to partner with your community on the level that we've been able to do, I think when we started, it was small. Like we were able to do a couple hundred dollars here or there, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
And then now, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars. Last year, we wrote a $27,000 check to a local charity. Nice. Just to be able to see that go to work in your local community. It's really, really impactful. And I think that's what makes small businesses really a part of the community, where, you know, huge corporations can write a $25,000 check, but when their budget's $1 billion, it's a lot different than for us, where we maybe make, you know, maybe $100,000 that year. And when a quarter of that goes back to charity, just think of that, how much more impact that might have on that business. So it's really part of our mission and what we're about. And I think you can see that in our customer base and when they want to come and support us by giving a beer.
Cool. So let's drill down a little bit more for anyone who's maybe not familiar with like where you started. You're in like West Colorado, like not really old Colorado City, but kind of in between downtown. And
so we're right off Garden of the Gods Road and 30th now. So our new facility is actually 2323 Garden of the Gods Road. So super easy to remember.
Okay.
And we built a new facility. We bought the land about 4 years ago and just completed construction earlier in the year. And then we opened in July. Some people call it Northwest. Some people call it the West Side. Some people call it, you know, Old Colorado City, even though it's not.
Those are
like East Siders who don't know anything about the West Side. But
I'm Black Forest, so I know nothing about the West Side, except it sounds really cool.
Yeah, like it's hard for me to find like anything east of the interstate. So, but I found this place, so that's good.
Nice.
No, it's 50 on the West Side. Just follow Garden of the Gods until it ends and you found it.
Right. Oh, cool. Oh, so you're like over like almost like not Mesa Road, but you're kind of where it connects up to go to Mesa Road.
Pretty much. If you go on Garden of the Gods as far west as you can go, where 30th Street and Garden of the Gods intersects, it's right there on the corner.
Okay, cool. I'll have to check that out because I go over in the area going to Garden of the Gods Club just because I'm bougie in that way.
I respect that.
So tell me about what you initially set up and then, you know, now what you're moving into.
Yeah. So when we started, the city of Colorado Springs required breweries to be in manufacturing districts when we started 9 years ago. We had to basically make a decision. Did you want to be south of downtown? Did you want to be in the Fillmore manufacturing district or in the Forge Road district, which is where Western Forge plant used to be, where they made all the Craftsman tools.
Right.
So we're like, well, those are horrible choices. So we're like, well, Garden of the Gods Road is a road that we all heard of. So let's just go on Forge. Yeah. And that's where we went to. And then when the Ivy Wild project kind of came around with Bristol, that was really the first one that really kind of pushed the limits of where breweries could go in the city. A lot of other communities throughout Colorado were pushing that limit too. But at the core of what we do, we are a manufacturer. We do manufacture a product. It makes sense where the city kind of got that idea from originally, from the planning and zoning part of it. But, you know, we are big taxpayer. We generate a lot of sales tax revenue. So I think they saw a new way that we could conduct our business. And as soon as that started to happen, we started looking for new space pretty much right away. And we couldn't actually find a building in Colorado Springs that could house us. Mm. We have a very unique requirement in our buildings. We draw a lot of power. We draw a ton of water, obviously, and gas. Yeah. The other thing that people don't think about is our floors. Mm-hmm. When we move hundreds of thousands of pounds of liquid on it a day, those floors tend to heave and move.
Right.
So we ended up buying a parcel of land, and that's kind of how we went about it. The other key thing for us was we wanted to incorporate a lot of things other than just beer.
Right.
So we kind of looked around at other projects. I like live music. I love going to Red Rocks. There isn't really that really nice, intimate venue in Colorado Springs. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to incorporate something like that into our project.
And that is that something you are?
Yeah, we added a 1,000-seat outdoor music venue into our project.
Wow.
Yep. And then we were down in Albuquerque and we saw this kind of shipping container outdoor food hall set up.
Right.
And then we added 17 shipping containers that are stacked. Some of them are together. And we created 12 basically tenants, so usable containers that tenants can rent. Mm. And they're full-scale kitchens. So you can get pizza, tacos, ice cream, barbecue, all sorts of different things in there.
And really expanded the food, like you know, so when I visited your business, I guess it was, I think my husband was maybe deployed at the time. So it probably had to be 5 years ago.
Sure.
There was the food truck outside.
Sure.
Just like they're outside of lots of different breweries.
Yep. Yeah. And we had to actually, by code, we were required to have we were not allowed to have food.
Right.
So that's a big change. And that was part of it is now we actually changed our license to incorporate that food option. And I think the city, to their credit, have really adopted some of these new changes to allow that to kind of happen. That synergy.
Are they permanent?
Vendors? Yep. They're fixed to the ground. Okay. So they're not food trucks. Some people ask, oh, they're food trucks. Like, no, they don't have wheels.
Right.
But yeah, just we wanted to create an environment, really, like I said earlier, like where community and culture can meet.
Okay.
And you can come here if you want to bring your kids and have a good time. They can get a cookie and ice cream from Sasquatch Cookies. They can do that. You can get a beer, obviously. You can catch a play. You can catch a Broncos game. You can catch a concert. You can catch an orchestra up there, a four-piece orchestra going on. We just have a lot of different things that are happening.
Super cool.
Yeah.
So, and I would think, especially with, how COVID has changed what we can do restaurant-wise, or, you're ready to pivot and help people that, need and
space. We definitely didn't plan for it to be that way.
No.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because our attorney, when he walked into our building last year when we were doing construction, he's like, man, you planned this perfectly. You have two huge garage doors that open, which makes us like COVID friendly because two walls open.
Right.
And we're like, wow, we didn't really plan it for that, but thank you. You're right. But it is really designed to be much more friendly in the new kind of pandemic world that we have to, as frontline restaurants and frontline, service members. Now we kind of have to implement the rules of the government now, if mask enforcement when we have to and seat assignments and gathering names and gathering phone numbers and all these things, or else we lose our license. So it's been stressful on our employees and everything. Mm-hmm. And we try to make it as easy as we can on them.
Right.
But it is challenging. And people provide them with a great facility that they feel proud of, I think has helped stem some of the angst that's going on, not only in our industry, but I think in all of society really right now.
Right, so explain to me the segue between your military service, and I know which is where the commitment from the military, stems from, to, restaurateur, brewer, entertainment venue owner.
Yeah. So I got out of the Army and I didn't know what I wanted to do. I knew I didn't want to go back to Iraq. Definitely not Afghanistan. Mm. So anything was better than that, right?
Which both places, my husband has worked in retirement, but.
Yeah, like being 6'1", 225 with 90 pounds of body armor on is like a terrible choice in the military. Yeah, so it was pretty simple. I'm not going back to those places. Just wanted to do anything. And it was 2009 when I got out. And, I had my college degree, but really wasn't the best time to get out of the military. So I took up whatever job I could get. I was actually an IT recruiter and just took it, like whatever I can get.
Still
snagged it
for the beer connection.
Yeah, it's coming. So I took that job, and my wife was just finishing up PA school. She was going to school while I was deployed. They asked me to move to Little Rock, Arkansas, and I was like, "Yeah, man, I'm not moving to Little Rock. Like, we're in Nashville. We love it there. That's where we went. Wanted to build our home." They're like, "We're gonna pay you this much money," and I was like, "I love Little Rock. Let's do it. We're going."
So a country song about Little Rock.
Yeah, I'm sure there's way too many, and they're all probably terrible. I mean, I'm sure it's a great place, but So we pack up, we go to Little Rock, and then that's where I got my first beer kit. And I, after 6 months of being there, I got a new boss, and she was in the Memphis office, and she drove down, and we had our first meeting, and it, interesting meeting. Didn't go super great. The next day she's like, hey, I need you coming to Memphis. I was like, I was just like, you were just here. And she fired me when I got there. So I drove 6 hours, 3 hours round trip to get fired. And I literally was like, I'll never work for anybody again. So I asked my wife, I was like, where do you want to go? She's like, Colorado. I was like, done. And I was like, I want to do this beer thing. I love it. I've been making beer for the 6 months I've been there. I wasn't any good at it. I didn't realize that quite yet. But I wanted to do it. I was 29 years old. Didn't really care. Moved to Denver because she got a job. With a geriatric clinic up there. And there's a thing called the 529 fund, which is an earmark loan for postnatal and veterans through the SBA program. Went to 30 banks. Everyone turned us down. So like every smart entrepreneur, we took out 18 credit cards in 20 minutes. And we balanced over $250,000 in credit card debt. And that's literally how Red Leg started.
Oh, wow.
The very next day, I got my credit shut down with like a 418 credit score. But by then the money was already out of the bank and in our, or it was out of the credit cards and in our bank. And there that was it. That's literally how Red Leg started. Most people don't know that, but that's actually a true story.
Wow, that's cool.
And now $10 million later, we with our loans to build this new facility. There you go. In nine years. Yeah.
You're listening to A Brighter Day in the Neighborhood on KPPF, and Todd Baldwin, the founder of Red Leg Brewery, is our guest today. So that's, I didn't know about the Nashville Nexus. So that's where actually I met my husband at Fort Campbell. Were you at Fort Campbell?
Yeah.
Okay. And then I went to University of Tennessee. He did his command at Bragg. And then we converged in Nashville, like when I was working as an attorney in a big firm there. Long story short, two, three kids later, boom.
Yeah.
You know,
it's the Mecca of awesomeness. Too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Broadway is like the best place on earth.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much anymore. It's a little tough to go there now.
It's a little crazy.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
Yeah.
We just were there.
Have you seen the Woo Girls?
I have not seen the Woo Girls.
The girls that go down Broadway going, woo!
Oh, yeah, I did.
They're all the bachelorette parties?
Yeah. I did see the Woo Girls. We might have been the last time we went, one of the Woo Girls or among the Woo Girls, because we got, there's this truck there. It's like a, not a Humvee, but it's this big open military vehicle this guy has. And they play like, you know, proud to be an American and all those things.
Yeah.
And we, because they're veterans supported, or they support veterans, we ended up renting that for the firm. I took all of my staff there to Nashville for an annual trip. And that's how I selected, you know, our vendor for that particular event. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. It's a fun spot.
Well, it was real nice because as you're going up and down Broadway, and then he, I guess, went to a couple other areas, but specifically up and down Broadway, you could really see the Patriots, like the people who responded, you know, really well to that, which I always appreciate.
Yep.
So you're in Denver.
Yep.
And how'd you make your way to the Springs?
Yeah. So after the first year, I was commuting with Red Leg. So I'd work.
Okay.
I get down. Well, sometimes I would just sleep on a cot behind a wall.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. You just got to, you know, just slug it out.
Yeah. I mean, I heard Elon Musk does that still.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, after a few $1 billion, like, why not? Right. Like, you can afford a few cots at that point. I think what being an entrepreneur is, I think it's hard for some people to articulate, or I think it's hard to articulate as an entrepreneur, but I think it's really hard to understand the commitment that it takes, the belief in yourself. Yeah. I think that's why sometimes people like mistaken it for like this gross ego, but it is a confidence in yourself.
Right.
It's a responsibility to employ people. It's a responsibility to give benefits, to give days off, to treat people with respect, but also it's to provide feedback when people maybe need to hear it.
Candor.
Yeah, right. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what has always attracted me to be an entrepreneur and to sleep on cots and to take out IT and credit cards. I couldn't see myself anymore being a desk working a desk job or anything like that.
That's how I feel about it too. Like that and being unemployable. Those two things working together.
For sure. You know? Yeah. It makes you do crazy things. Maybe, you know, like sleeping on a cot and taking out like $10 million in debt again, but not again, but I think to have a dream, to be able to put it on paper and then to see it come to reality is something that few people get an opportunity to do. And if you have that chance, like, why not? I think the military taught me that, especially through some of the experiences that you have to go through or some people get to go through. I'm sure your husband can probably speak to some of those tough times that, but these things don't seem as tough. They're still scary and they're still hard.
Right.
But there's a different kind of feeling when you're like, you know what? Been through some hard times and I can do this too and I can get through it. Not saying they're any less challenging, but
no. Well, and I will, I think a lot of times, like even when I meet people still, they'll say, you know, oh, you know, tell your husband, thank you for your service. Like, thank you for your family service and whatnot. And I mean, I can't say beyond, you know, first responders that there are, you know, any Americans who really put themselves on the line and probably deal with hard, hard stuff the way, you know, the military service members do, especially who are in the, you know, front lines or in operations and things like that. You know, our family still, you know, through my husband's employment and his, he deploys as a contractor, we still support those guys on the front lines.
For
and,
sure.
And that's an extraordinarily important thing for us to do, because we, when I'm thinking about the cool things that you're doing, that's exactly why service members do what they do, so that we can do really cool stuff like this. It's the, I
absolutely.
Mean, you go from, you know, and I don't know precisely where you started, but you go from where you started, but in this country, you can actualize that's this type of dream.
Yeah. Well, by birth, we all start in different places.
Yeah.
By choice is where we end up. And I think in very few places in the world, that's still a choice.
Yeah.
I think sometimes that's misunderstood. The American dream is not gifted to anyone in this country. Like, by birth is where you start, but by choice is where you end up.
That's right.
And that is what, that's the American dream. And I think that someone has forgotten that just because you're born here means you get all these other things that come with it. What you get is the choice.
Right.
And you get to choose to take $10 million in debt out. Mm-hmm. The bank also gets to choose to give it to you. That's they can also say, no, man, like, absolutely not. But, you know, if you prove yourself, you do well, you work hard, you can go get it. But there's that whole piece. So you have to go sleep on a cot. You have to work 20 hours a day. You have to sacrifice. You have to do these things that I think it's misunderstood sometimes.
Yeah.
A lot of people see the finish line, but they forget that you had to run this 100-mile race before that to get there.
Absolutely. It's like the tip of the iceberg.
Absolutely.
They don't see what's really under the water, or like that duck.
Yeah.
Whose feet are pedaling furiously and you're chill. You can see the results, see what's sitting on top.
Yeah.
But it takes a lot to look this cool.
Right?
Right?
Yeah. I would say crushing a Xanax is always an option.
Oh, you're funny. Hey, so you mentioned, you know, Colorado is definitely a beer mecca, like craft beer mecca in particular. And I before I got here, I didn't realize there was anything other than, you know, Rocky Mountain spring water,
you know,
flowing out of Golden. But, and in fact, I think when we first arrived, I got one of those like beer maps.
Sure.
You know, like, you know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
That comes with all the, I don't even know. I mean, I don't even know that you could get through them all in a year if you wanted to.
Yeah, I think you'd, yeah.
I don't think you could.
Your liver wouldn't take it. Yeah.
So, you know, so that's a bold move for you to, you know, especially in your own words, not very good at drinking, you know, making beer.
Apparently. Yeah. Well, it felt really good when there was only like 100 of us 9 years ago. Now there's like 800. It doesn't seem very smart now.
Wow.
But it was like, we felt that if we could make it here, we could take it anywhere and be successful.
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone predicted the beer industry to do what it did.
Okay. Tell me more about that. What did it do?
Yeah, good question. So, like I said, we were like license number 100 in Colorado. I don't remember exactly what we were, but there wasn't that many of us. And it was crazy because I thought there was a lot at that time.
Right.
And to think that when we started, we were number 6 in Colorado Springs, like El Paso County, Woodland Park, kind of like the Pikes Peak region.
Right.
And now there's 35.
Wow.
Who would have thought that? But in places like Virginia and North Carolina, where they might have had 5 in that entire East Coast, now there's 5,000.
Right.
That sort of volume, I think, is what people did not expect. And when I mean volume, there's now more supply in the market than there is demand. Not saying demand has decreased in the craft industry, but there is more supply. So you have a lot of folks that have increased capacity. So increase their supply.
Mm-hmm.
And in our industry, when you're manufacturing a product, you have to find a home for that product once it's produced.
Right.
So you're going to see that balance. And that's why we chose to go the direction we did with our project. It's not solely reliant on us serving one product.
Gotcha.
You can come there for a lot of different options instead of just beer.
Right.
So that's the reason why we went kind of in a tangent opposite of where just beer, only crank it out as much as you can.
Right.
And take on that huge debt source where it's just relying on that one thing.
Sure. And so we're talking about, like, you're talking about this kind of, and I'm just going to use the word, like, this explosion in the last decade or so.
About 5 years.
Just in the last 5 years. Well, I know when I was working, I worked at a law firm that represented, you know, businesses when we were in Nashville. And I think we left there. So my oldest is 18 and she was 4 or 5. But I think, no, she was going into... No, yeah. She was going into preschool. Anyway, we represented this one company that distributed and wanted, you know, sodas, craft sodas. Do you remember mm-hmm. when those began? Like, I remember one was Jones Soda because that's sure. my last name. Did the craft beer, like, track that or come out of that? Do you know how that all, you know?
Yeah, good question. I think everyone remembers, like, their first craft beer. Yeah. Like, you got to remember the people that really, like, paved the way, like the New Belgiums of the world. Like, I remember sure. like New Belgium Fat Tire and where right. that came from. Like, for me, it was like a brewery out of New York called Oma Gang. You okay. get that, like those small, like old Chicago's, yeah. the Flying Saucers. Maybe you remember that from your Nashville days.
Right.
You know, those were those craft brewery centric or craft tap houses centric mm-hmm. places mm-hmm. that were trying to pull. Yazoo Brewery was another one in Nashville.
Right. Yeah.
Right. They were trying to push that envelope. And then I think it went 1 to 2 and then 2 went to like 4, but right. that took maybe 10 years. Then 4 went to 8 over another 5 years.
Right.
Then 5 went to 50 over another 5 years. Right. And then that's kind of how it spread really quickly.
So what do you think is like, why? Do you know the why?
Yeah, consumers, I think, really started to push that. Yeah, right. I think they appreciate the interaction they have with, right. I know the person who makes this. Remember, it wasn't that long ago, 200 years ago, where mm-hmm. there were this many breweries in the country with half sure. as many folks. Right. We're way past that now. But 5 years ago, there was, you know, 3,500 breweries in the country. That's how many there were back in the 1700s, 1800s.
Wow.
But Prohibition really hampered that. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing people don't like to talk about, but it's true, is the distribution laws that came out of that.
Okay.
You know, states forced breweries into distribution rules where they had to force into distribution. Where here mm-hmm. in Colorado, we have very friendly distribution laws towards gotcha. Breweries, where in Tennessee, Virginia, mm-hmm. Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. they are anti, in my opinion, anti-friendly towards breweries specifically. Okay. You have to have the what they call the three-tier system. Hmm. So you have a distributor, you mm-hmm. have a wholesaler, which would mm-hmm. be like us. Then you have like you, the consumer, right. and they have to be separate from each other.
The so, wholesaler and the consumer.
Yes.
So that's the distributor.
So for us, we can take it directly to you, the patron or the person. We can take it directly to the liquor store. You can buy from the liquor store. Okay. Well, in most states, they don't want that. They want the distributor there in the middle. Well, think about it from a cost standpoint.
Right.
Right. You're going to pay somebody else to have their hand in there.
You always pay the middleman.
Right. Same thing. Mm-hmm. So as you usually get further west, those rules have usually don't apply. Yeah. And you're seeing a lot of states repeal it. Tennessee is going through a lot of that right now. And as those rules started to change, mm-hmm. you're seeing more and more craft breweries get into the industry because it's now worth the time and money. Or those distribution laws were, some people would say that it quelled growth in the craft beer industry, right? It really favored big beer, Budweiser, Coors, things like that, right? It stymied growth from those smaller folks. Yeah. And that's why you saw certain breweries grow in certain states, right? New Belgium specifically was growing in Colorado because the laws here were very friendly.
I do remember, and I don't remember, know if you remember this, down on, and it wasn't, I think it was on Second Avenue. There used to be this tap room. It was kind of behind where the Hooters is. And you would go down and there were all these like 50 beers on tap. Do you remember that? It was early 2000s.
No. Yeah. I don't recall.
I think we went there. I think we ended up going there for work one time.
Awesome.
Yeah. But at that time, you know, you're right. It really wasn't a thing, you know, to go and drink a variety of beers. Now, whiskey is a whole other thing, you know, go and have that. But I think it's actually really cool how that, you know, we used to be able to get that variety. Like even when we were stationed in Europe, to be able to go and, you know, go to Scotland and travel around and try different scotches and stuff like that. It's really a neat thing.
And think how long those people have been around for. Those people have been around for 1,000 years making their scotch.
Absolutely.
Where I think you'll see that here, like obviously you see the growth, but then it'll plateau out and then you'll see the strong kind of move to the top and then you'll hopefully keep going.
We only have just a few more minutes. I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about the charities that you, you know, are near and dear to your heart.
Absolutely. Like I mentioned earlier this morning, it's important to us to partner with the community in any way we can. Obviously, we have a soft spot for our veteran and military mm-hmm. community. Mm-hmm. We also love supporting the trails and open spaces, mm-hmm. being next to the Ground of the Gods. We love that. Yeah. This year, we sponsored like the Pikes Peak Ascent Marathon. Nice. I obviously did not run that because I don't run, but I watch people do that.
I'm telling you.
That was super cool.
If you ever see me running, you need to start
just
running.
Keep going with you.
On the other way. Or cops coming or something.
Deal. But no, we love doing that. We've literally given away tens of thousands of dollars. I don't even know how many. It's important. It's important to us to do that. I think that's what makes community businesses so important. I think the new facility is going to do that. I think it's going to generate a lot more opportunities for us to partner with folks. We're onboarding right now, like a community liaison person. We've never had that. So we're going to see what that kind of role shapes out to be.
That's awesome.
I'm excited to, just to see what more we can do.
Yeah. I'm excited to see what more you can do. Do you have axe throwing?
No, we don't.
You ought to think about
that. We had a lot of requests for axe throwing. So
think about it because I've promised my firm our next outing is going to include axe throwing.
I feel like as a lawyer, you should in your head be like, well, there's this lawsuit. From my perspective, you're like, hey man, my insurance is going to go through the roof.
It's completely voluntary. And the axe throwers, I think, have all the waivers.
Yeah, but you know, voluntary doesn't stop someone from suing you.
This is true. In fact, you can never stop someone from suing you.
See?
So, yeah, which is why I'm in business, I suppose. So, Todd, it was a pleasure spending time with you. Can you just one more time go over where everybody can find your new facilities? Because I know I want to make sure I'm getting over there sooner versus later, especially for some of that live music.
No, I appreciate it. And thanks for having us on this morning.
Absolutely.
2323 Garden of the Gods Road. Just go west on Garden of the Gods Road, basically till it ends. You can find us on redlegbrewing.com and all those social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Snap, whatever, redlegbrewing.com.
Awesome. And thank you all so much for tuning in to KPPF and the Brighter Day in the Neighborhood. We'll be right back here next Sunday, and we'll look forward to talking with you then. Until then, take care and have a great Sunday.
This has been A Brighter Day in the Neighborhood, presented by Brighter Day Law. Heard every Sunday at 11 a.m. on KPPF, 98.5 FM, 1040 AM, and 95.7 FM. Listen to the companion podcast on Podbean. Brighter Day Law are an experienced and qualified team of divorce and family law attorneys. Their aim is to help you get through that emotional and challenging time of divorce and other family disputes. The mission of Brighter Day Law is to compassionately help families resolve their disputes with personalized legal representation while keeping the best interest of the entire family at heart. Their attorneys handle all kinds of family law cases, including child custody, divorce, high asset divorce, mediation, and alimony. Brighter Day Law, compassionate counsel in dark and stressful times. 225-4493 or at brighterdaylaw.com.